Hey, Mac, when does deer season start?
Well, if you want the best deer herd possible, Lanny, you need to start right now.
Right now.
That's why we're starting our promotion. I mean, we've got a Deer Season Starts Now promotion on plantbiologic.com where you can pick up our Game Changer soybeans, our forage soybeans, and our spring protein peas. While you're there, you might as well go ahead and pick up some brassicas like our final forage and winter bowls.
Yeah, stock up for the cool season planting right now. Listeners to the GK Podcast, if you use coupon code GKPOD, you can save an additional 10% off our entire selection of warm season, cool season, and clover food plot seed. Get started today and visit plantbiologic.com for an unforgettable fall.
I am Jeff Foxworthy, and welcome to Gamekeeper Podcast. If you want to learn more about farming for wildlife and habitat management, then buddy, you are in the right place. Join the Gamekeeper crew direct from Mossy Oak Land Enhancement Studio as they discuss the latest wildlife and habitat management practices, news, and of course, hunting. There's no telling what you'll learn, but I'm going to tell you, I bet it's interesting. Enjoy.
We're live in 3, 2, 1.
Okay, everybody, we got a room full here in the Gamekeeper Studio.
House. Yeah.
West Point, Mississippi. I'm looking around the room. Dudley's here with a big smile. Yeah. Max fact checking us. Lanny, this is a subject you love so much.
I do love lizards.
Looking at and sitting in Tox's chair, I don't know, Ricky Flint.
There he is, right here.
Yeah.
Come on with it.
And then look, guys, we've got the hunting team, mm-hmm. the crew that killed recently the Mississippi state record alligator. That's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see if we can introduce these guys. We got Don Woods, and he looks like he's about to fall asleep any minute.
He said it's been a long week, man. Gator hunting's rough on bro.
We got Joey Clark that looks like he could be a bouncer.
Yeah.
Take care of any problems we might have. Not Tanner White looks like he's probably a sophomore at college somewhere.
Yeah.
Will Thomas looks like a banker, a financier.
Well, I'm an attorney.
Oh, Lord, watch what you say.
And then we got Richie over here running the board with all these. Richie, don't hit the horns for yourself.
Oh, gator hunter himself.
I don't know how we got everybody mic'd up, but we do.
Yeah.
But look, we are so proud of you guys. We've been hearing about this story. And our whole office is a bunch of alligator hunters since this season came in. Ricky, you were kind of responsible for all this.
Oh, yeah.
Being the past alligators, whatever you
Czar.
Were. What were you?
I was the alligator program coordinator for the Department of Wildlife, Fisheries, and Parks. I worked for the agency for 30 years and spent the last 20 as alligator program coordinator. And been here and done a couple of shows with you guys. Yeah. And y'all have done a couple of shows on alligator hunting, and I will say that I did review those shows, and y'all did pretty good. I couldn't tell that y'all did anything particularly wrong, not necessarily against the law. So congratulations.
Well, say we couldn't show you what me and Richie were doing out there.
No, we couldn't.
You know, it looked more like the video was like a Blair Witch Trial kind of a look.
The video that Mac did, that was spot on. We could probably use that on the alligator training course video. They did. Very good job.
In the daylight. You know, I've caught one in the daylight.
And some probably cover some safety things as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was a fun time. And I mean, just being able to get outside and do something and utilize some of the awesome resources that Mississippi has and the plans and rules that Mr. Ricky's put into place.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was awesome. I mean, it really was.
It really is a super success story from a conservation perspective.
And it's been a long time coming to get it to this point. I know, Ricky, you were so excited to actually have a season. But there was a lot of work that got it to that point.
Yeah, so, you know, when I started in the alligator program in 2003, one of the first assignments I was asked to do was to consider organizing and developing a public alligator hunting season for the state of Mississippi. And I was very green at the time as far as, you know, what would it take to do that? And it took about a year and a half reviewing what other states were doing, and just so happened that I was at a regional meeting one time where the alligator program coordinator from the state of Georgia was there, and he gave a presentation on their system, and that is really how I molded Mississippi season, was a lot of what Georgia was doing, and that we started with that. We kind of put the hamster in the cage there for the first year in 2005, a very limited opportunity on the Pearl River. They're just north of Jackson on the Ross Barnett Reservoir, and it gradually grew. And I had a dream of it becoming a statewide alligator hunting opportunity, which we did in 2013, 12 and 13. And, you know, started tagging alligators in 2007 in hopes of getting some information back, just like you do from duck bands. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are familiar with different types of mark recapture research projects that agencies do. And it's one of the greatest symbiotic relationships that wildlife biologists have, and that is with hunters. Mm. That when we tag and mark wildlife in hopes of hunters harvesting these animals to be able to gain information. And that's why hunters are so important in many aspects of wildlife regulations, wildlife biology, and the things that we learn. That if it weren't for hunters actually going out and legally harvesting these animals, there's a lot of information that as biologists we never would be able to retain. Mm. And so when Don called me the next morning, you know, that they had caught this really nice alligator and they thought it was over 14 feet long and it just so happened to have one of my tags in it, I got very excited. And even though I'm not officially with the Department of Wildlife anymore, I insisted that I be on site to have this alligator verified, because, you know, it's something that I'm very passionate about. Never once thought that an alligator that we tagged back in 2007 would be captured by another an alligator hunter, much less make, you know, a state record. So it's pretty cool.
That is real cool.
Yeah, it really is. So I think, why don't we start with you guys kind of telling your story. And all four of y'all were in this was a group hunt. Did one of y'all have the tag? Was one of y'all officially the hunter and the rest were helping? Or
I was the one that was drawn.
That's Don.
Right.
You got drawn.
So I got drawn, and then we were trying, you know, we tried to get the hunt together. We, you know, we always kind of, most of us try to, you know, always have some part of the same group go. And so this year was kind of interesting. We didn't, you know, it was kind of a last minute thing. We didn't know, you know, if we were all going to be able to get together, but we finally did and were able to get out there and go have some fun.
It is fun. It's a community effort, too.
Yeah, it is.
And we've been hunting together for a number of years. Don and I are cousins and more like probably brothers. But we've been, ever since, I guess every year they've had a season, I've hunted, except for one. I think I missed one year where somebody in the group didn't get drawn, but we have a pretty good sized group of people that put in every year, and somebody in the group will get drawn, and we all kind of go together.
Yeah.
And so we've all hunted together a number of years.
So is Joey the muscle of the group?
The muscle and the looks.
Yeah, I guess that's my job, is whenever they get it close enough, let me use my muscles and try to get him up in the boat where we can.
That's like Lanny. Y'all, no way y'all could get that gator in the boat, though, did you?
Yes.
Yeah, we did. And honestly, that's the only time that it kind of got dicey, just because when you try to get something that big in the boat, you know, we muscled. Will and I had his head in the boat and the upper half of his body. And then that bottom half, we're trying to get him in, and you start taking on water, and it happens very quickly. So you got to kind of adjust and find out what you want to do to get that gator in the boat and be safe about it.
How big a boat were y'all fishing out of?
14 foot.
It's 14 foot.
Oh my!
Yeah,
it
was 14 foot. Trapper John. Let me think about this.
He was 14 foot.
Yeah. So needless to say,
I don't think we ever said in this that the record alligator was 14 feet 3 inches.
Yeah.
14 foot boat.
Yeah.
Wow. So what was the record before that?
14 feet 3/4 inches was the previous record that had been in place for about 7 years, 6 or 7 years.
Wow.
I'd be curious to know how much scouting before season you did. Was this?
Did you know it was there?
Yeah.
No, we didn't. Like I said, we kind of put the hunt together last second, and you know, we got some spots we kind of go to every year. You know, same area, and we've had success in that. You know, those places before, but really had no idea he was there.
We knew it was going to be good this year because of the drought. And the areas where we hunt, there are a lot of sloughs, natural sloughs, but the spot we hunt always has water in it. So I assumed that there would be a lot of alligators that are leaving those sloughs coming to this body of water.
It's a lot of backwaters and things that weren't didn't exist.
Yeah, and so I knew it was going to be a good year. And then prior to the hunt, before it got dark, we did spot this alligator from the bank. And we saw him, and we said, all right, that's no doubt over 12 feet. And that's kind
of a keeper.
That's kind of the range we're looking for. And so we went straight, put the boat in, went straight to him. And then the hunt was on. And it was a long, drawn-out ordeal.
Well, I mean, you got to tell us.
Yeah, let's take it from the top.
So, I mean, I first kind of want to say, like, if this was you guys' second, third, fourth year of doing this, do you think you would have landed this gator?
No, I mean,
no way whatsoever.
I counted it up, and I think we've killed 8, probably 12-foot alligators in the past.
So you guys have a lot of experience.
We've caught a bunch of 11-foot alligators and 10-foot alligators. We caught and released in the same area, an 11-foot one time, brought it all the way in the boat, taped up, and then let it go. So we've done a lot of it. And I don't think without that experience, we would have been able to land this alligator.
I mean, I think, yeah, definitely, because we pretty much threw every trick we knew at him, and he beat us, I don't know, 8 or 9 times until we finally, you know, he just happened to, you know, wear down enough to be able get to get hold of him. Yeah. So he was...
Well, we got to hear the story.
Yeah. I'll kick it off. And
so there I was.
Yes, that's right. There I was. So we went straight to the spot, past a bunch of nice alligators. And we went straight to this one. We got to him, and there was no doubt this was the big gator. And so at first, I was running the trolling motor. Tanner and Don were doing most of the casting, and we got on him, and at first he would stay up for a while, and we were able to cast at him, and we hung into him. I guess the first time he fought around, we fought with him for about an hour that time, and he went under a log.
First cast, I hooked him way back in the tail.
Yeah.
Which you don't. Yeah. It's not ideal.
And I think he was – did he go under and you hooked him in the tail?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And anyway, so we fought him, but he kept going under logs. And that was his trick, man. He would go under a log. One of the logs he went under, we were able to throw a line on the other side of the log and find where the line was running out. Because when they go under a log and they take off, you're sitting in one place, your line's going down, and he's just taking line, but you're not going anywhere. So he can spool you. And so he was doing that. I found the line on the other side. We pulled it up, and that's when old Muscle Man came in. He pulled the log up and broke it off, and we were able to get the line out from under. So that was the first time. Yeah. But then ultimately, he broke the rod
That was when the – rod when we were dealing with the whole log and all that kind of stuff. Because remember, we sat there and held him for about an hour with half a rod.
Yeah.
And that's when he finally took off.
This is about the time that Tanner said we'd be in bed by midnight. So,
We first tied into him at 10, and I said it, I don't know. I looked around, and I said, this is awesome. We'll be in bed by midnight.
Famous last words.
Only did I know.
That got brought up many times.
It did. So,
around 2 o'clock.
When you hook into one, it's like you're in a time warp, though. I mean, there's so much going on. You know, the time just flies by. It really does. Yeah.
And so all of our listeners may not know this, but you're basically throwing a fancy spinning rod with a treble hook.
It's sight fishing.
That's how you do it in Mississippi for the most part.
The most popular method is large freshwater fishing gear with a weighted treble hook. Usually it's most commonly a 10-aught treble hook, so it's pretty big. And you want the alligator to be up at the surface, and you're casting the hook over the back of the alligator, retrieving the line until it comes in contact with the alligator, and then you're snagging it and holding on until it gets there. Ultimately, you like to try and get multiple rods and multiple hooks into the alligator so that you can control it a little better.
Especially 14 foot.
Yeah. And in the ideal situation, if you can get the hook up in the around the head or the front leg, you usually can handle them a lot better. But like he was just describing, that first hook wound up being somewhere around the tail, and that's probably the worst place you will get one because they got all the power that they can use against you. Whereas if you get one up here in the front leg or around the head, you can kind of take some of their power away from them. But yeah, the snatch hook is most popular. And then I think y'all talked about a blind cast at one point, but a blind cast is when the alligator has gone on the surface and you think you know where it's laying. Sometimes when they're laying on the bottom, there'll be a bubble trail. It comes to the surface and you know where the alligator's at, and you cast your hook, let it lay across the bottom and retrieve it across the bottom until it comes in contact with the alligator. It's a very common technique that works very well that can speed the process up.
Yeah. And at first, when we got on this alligator, he was showing himself more. And then over the night, we broke off from him, I think, 8 times.
Oh, where, wow.
I mean, we just totally lost him. He would go under a log and spool us or break the line or whatever. And he got off at least 8 times.
Yeah.
And so as the night progressed, the alligator got smarter. And he got to where he would just pop up and get a little air and then go back down.
Yeah. Hmm.
And so Tanner and Don would would start just blind casting. And y'all talk about how you caught him blind casting there, Tanner.
Yeah, so when the alligator would come up and he would go down, when he would leave, I mean, there was a swish of water and you knew he was leaving that area. But sometimes when he'd go down, he'd kind of back up as he dropped. And you knew when he was backing up as he dropped, he was pretty much going to be right there on the bottom, and we had a chance. So anytime he went down like that, we'd try to get in position and take some shots at him. And I think we blind called him between me and Don 5 different times.
5 or 6, yeah. It was
And were you spooling, breaking line, bending hooks?
Oh, it was
all the above. Yeah. Yeah.
So you're using all some kind of, like, what, 200-pound braid or something?
I think we had 100.
Okay, mm-hmm. Wow.
And luckily, I brought a spool with me because we had to re-spool a couple different reels exactly. Multiple times.
Yeah. I assume most folks probably would have given up at this point. I mean, I think there was
I think at some point throughout the night, every one of us wanted to give up at some point, but yeah. There was somebody else that said, no, let's just throw one more time.
Mm. Right. I can tell you, all of us were willing to leave. My thought was, we know where he is. He hasn't left. We can come back tomorrow night when we're fresh. But this guy right here, Tanner White, would not give up. And he said, if he keeps playing the game, we're going to play with him.
Yeah.
And every time, and we would kind of, it would work well when we would kind of act like we were leaving the area.
Oh, yeah.
And we would go away from him and then, you know, turn back and look with the light and he'd pop up.
And I will say, people have asked me time and time again, can the record be broken? And yes, the record can be broken. There are, I think, we'll eventually have a 15-foot alligator. Hmm. They're out there. How much larger than 15 foot? Probably not very many. But what I've always said is anybody can get out there and hook into an alligator. It's not that difficult. But to be able to have the persistence to stay with one like this size, It takes some stamina and state and you know, mm-hmm. some patience, and you know, just listening to their story. When we talked about this on the way up here, you know, when you get on a big alligator and they're going away from you, the more you stay with that alligator and kind of pace them and continue to cast at them and keep them under the water for as long as possible, they eventually lose some of their stamina because they're not being able to come to the surface and get a good breath of air. And they talked about multiple times the alligator came to the surface and said he was only up for a second and went back down. Well, in my opinion, when we're trying to catch alligators, when I was with the Department of Wildlife, tagging them and stuff, that's what we would do. Once we got one to come to the surface and go back down, if I knew his path, direction of travel, stay with them with the trolling motor and stay right there behind them. And eventually they'll get tired. And they do. They build up lactic acid in their muscles just like we do from a big workout. And eventually you'll tire them out.
It takes a lot of determination and Red Bull.
Yeah.
What were the intervals in between, like from the first time y'all hooked into him to the five or six breakoffs?
Oh, I would say it was, you know, anywhere from 30 minutes to, you know, an hour, mm-hmm. you know, depending on each occasion. But that was one of the interesting things about all this was that, you know, I've been with these guys and we've seen plenty of big gators that we've hooked into and lost and eventually lost track of them. They just disappear. But this one just, it would not leave that spot. And that was, you know, the interesting part about it and why we never wanted to leave and never give up on it. You know, obviously we're glad we didn't.
Yeah.
Wow.
There must not have been any other hunters in the area, right? Did y'all see any that night?
No comment.
Yeah. I like We're not going to get as many details as we want, that's for sure.
I like it.
I'm still amazed this happened in a 14-foot boat because y'all, like the 14-foot boat I have, it, you know, we'd be about a capacity when we were y'all. So it's got to be wider.
We definitely were. And I think on the ride back, all four of us were on the back bench and the gator was in the front just so we wouldn't take on any water.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's safe to say that there was probably a sightable offense once. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That pounds of persons and gear right. with a little yeah. tag on there.
There may have been. We would have been willing to pay that fine.
Well, in my experience, we went to a smaller boat so we could get into more different areas. And I didn't know if that's what y'all's plan was
that really has been over the years.
Yeah. And you know, that brings up a point, talking about this alligator in small boats. When we caught this alligator in 2007, it was in a small private pond, probably I'd say less than 3/4 of an acre, behind some people's house in Vicksburg, Mississippi. And we borrowed their 10-foot little John boat that they had there in the pond. And when we caught him and tagged him in 2007, he was 10 feet, 11 inches long. So he was 11 inches longer than the boat we caught him in, and he was 3 inches longer than their boat. Wow.
So that was so 16 years ago?
16 years, and it grew 40 inches over those 16 years. And a lot of people will ask, you know, how old was the alligator? And I've learned through the tagging system that we've done and getting – recaptures and alligators being harvested over the years. We've recaptured a lot of those alligators ourselves. But I use it to, one, determine how far these alligators move, and two, you know, what's the growth rates? Because that's one thing we didn't know or understand before we started this tagging program. Well, I did learn that alligators that are in the Mississippi Delta have a much better growth rate than they do in, say, central Mississippi. Those alligators around the Pearl River, Ross Barnett zone, their growth rates are not near as well as those in the Mississippi Delta. But, you know, the growth, the pyramid, okay, they sit at the top of the food chain. And when you consider the Mississippi Delta, the rich soils, it produces great insects, which produce great plants, which produce, you know, all the things that feed on these things through the pyramid, it just compounds up to the top of the food chain with the alligator. And another thing we've noticed with the introduction of Asian carp that are in the Mississippi River and all the tributaries, that has become a tremendous food resource for alligators in the Mississippi Delta. And so I figured up most of our alligators in Mississippi Delta, from my tagging data, show anywhere from about a 5 to 8 inch growth rate per year, depending. And just like in deer and anything else, there are individuals that are outliers that just do much better. Even in the same conditions with other alligators in the same area, they just don't grow as much. Some of it could be genetic. Some of it could just be food resources and competition. Who knows? But if you figured up with that, I've determined that this alligator at a minimum was probably 42 years old.
Wow.
Likely much older than that. But, you know, that's guessing on about a 5 inch per year plus right. the last 16 years.
And what about weight wise? How heavy was he in 07?
I don't know how much it weighed, but, we did have, belly girth and tail girth measurements and, you know, all of that has tremendously increased since that time.
So he was 800 pounds.
Wow. 802 and a half.
That's a lot of gator.
66 inches in girth in the belly and 47 and a half in the tail.
Yeah.
So that's crazy.
I promise you it was a lot of gator when it was time to get him in the 14-foot boat.
Yeah.
You know, y'all talk about how you get that alligator in the boat. There is a protocol. You can get these alligators in the boat fairly easy. If you'll get the snout of the boat, of the alligator.
I'm listening, man. Who's got a notepad?
Take notes. So if you'll get the snout of the alligator over the gunwale of the boat and then grab the far leading front leg and start rotating that alligator into the boat. And as it starts coming, then reach and grab the far hind leg. And if you start that out, it would just roll over the gun rather than trying to lift it. You're just rolling it into.
Yeah.
So I take it you guys didn't do that.
Well, we did some version of that. I mean, this thing was so large.
That's four people holding 200 pounds apiece.
I think I was standing in the back corner just trying to get some weight to keep that side of the boat above water. It was just taking on so much.
How deep of water were you on in?
Oh man, he's asking all these questions. Yeah. It was 12 feet, I think, 12 to 14 feet.
Yeah, probably something like that.
What zone? West Central?
Yeah.
West Central.
Did you get a pin for that?
Yeah. we're sponsored by Onyx. Yeah. Sorry, I was in question.
Well, but with this one, getting him in the boat, we got him to the side the best we could, and we wanted to get his tail up so we could get our hands on his feet, on all his feet. But we got his head kind of over in the boat, and then we got a big hook, what we call the wrench hook. And that's probably the key to this alligator. But anyway, we got his tail up and kind of got him even with the boat. And then we all grabbed a foot and started rolling. And when we would roll in the front end, they'd be like, hold on, the water's coming in.
And we'd have to shift our weight.
We'd roll, and we finally got him to where we could roll him in. And when we did, even after we had him in the boat, the front of it went under a few times when I went up there to do something. And it would go under, and we'd have to back. Everybody had to get in the back of the boat.
And I never asked y'all this question. At what point did y'all discover that it was tagged? Was it later?
I think the processor saw that. I mean, yeah, because it was such a mess out there. We really couldn't.
So with all the breakoffs that occurred during this battle, I'd love to know how long this went on for. But my question is: was there a point when somebody said, "We're gonna get him. We're gonna get him.
Got him."
We actually had a running bet going in the boat, and some of us were betting on the gator, and some of us were betting on us. And Don Jay, who'd you bet on?
I think I bet on the gator. But about eight of the 10 times I was right.
Yeah. Were you doubling up every time?
I should have. It was a heck of an experience.
There's probably not a better feeling. I know from the standpoint when officially we were out catching and tagging alligators. I mean, we wanted to tag big alligators too, so it was very important to us. But there's nothing like that sense of relief when it finally you've got it. You know, whether you've got a snare on it or when it's finally loaded up in the boat.
Yeah. So how long did it take from the time you hooked it the first time to the time you knew you had
seeing him to rolling him in the boat?
We put the first hook in him. It was 10. It's 10:09. It was 10:09. We put the first hook in it.
Okay. I don't know. I'm kind of blurry about it. He's still tired. I'm watching a lot.
Wasn't it 3:30 when we finally dispatched him with the shotgun? That's
right. It was about 3:30 when we shot him and had him in the boat around 4 o'clock, a little after.
Sweet.
The hardest part, well, no, it was all hard, but one of the very difficult parts was getting the noose on him, because this alligator would come up too far from the boat. And so,
I mean, he's 14 foot long.
Yeah. I mean, our theory at first, and we've had a lot of alligators where we put two hooks in him immediately.
Yeah.
And with this alligator, though, we've had a lot of success just one line in him. Because if you have two and he starts rolling or doing something, your lines will get together and then they're kind of pulling apart. Mm-hmm. So Don was just insistent that we were only going to put one line in him. And we did that for most of the night. We would only have one line. We have this big hook that's like a 20-aught hook mm-hmm. that hand we call line. The – yeah, with a hand line on it. And we call that the wrench hook because the first edition had a wrench duct taped to the shaft of it.
To make it heavier.
To make it heavier. Yeah. But this one actually has a weight on it, but yeah. we're still known as the wrench hook. And so my theory was we need to put the wrench hook in him so we can manhandle him. And I did that one time, and it actually bent the whole barb on one of those and almost broke it. And that made him really upset.
Mm. Yeah. I think we actually lost
I think every time you put that hook in it, it was like giving him a shot of adrenaline yeah. every time that hook went into him. And I was tired of that hook.
That's how I lost the biggest gator with the hand line that I've ever hooked out here. See? Sure is. Same See? Situation. But, you know, when you get that hand line, I'm like, oh, he's coming to the boat now. Yeah. You know, but
I love a hand line. Yeah,
you guys look like, I mean, y'all are all smiling. And that must have been a lot of fun. Oh, because y'all. I can see y'all reliving it in your mind right now.
You know, that's my whole thing with alligator season is getting together with your buddies and you're talking trash and you're just having a lot of fun. I mean, this area where we hunt, we never dreamed that there would be a record book alligator in there. That's not something we were like, oh, let's go get the record. We're just out there having a good time. And, you know, we've caught a lot of 12-footers, and there's a lot of 12-footers out in this, you know, area. But, you know, we have a great time. And I love taking my kids. I've got 4 kids, and they all love the outdoors. And that was the deal I had with Don. You know, he was a tag holder, and I told him, I said, all right, I know you're living in Oxford now, but if we catch a big one the first night, you're going to stay and go with me and the kids the next night.
And so, well, he's so tired.
And so sure enough, the next night, we went from there. I've got some land in Yazoo County, and so we were out there camping in the camper. And after between going up to the processor to get him measured and all, I was out there on the tractor getting ready for the dove field. And then that night, we went again. We had 5 kids with us that night.
2 boats and 5 kids, yeah.
Man, we boated some smaller gators. We were trying to find one that would fit the runt gator, the small gator, because most of the ones we were catching were like 8-footers, but we had such a good time. It's a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun.
I'll say it. I've never really been interested in it before just because it's at night and I don't really sleep well anyway, but y'all made this sound a lot of fun. So I've had a change of heart. I may have to.
I would have
it's fun. Along I'm myself. Gonna tell you it's fun. Y'all know I like to sleep more than anybody. I go to bed when it gets dark, but not during gator season.
I would have loved to have had a camera on you guys when y'all finally pulled it in the boat. And
it was all smiles. You know, nothing but teeth.
Somebody get the Oreos.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
Well, it's just such a sense of relief. I mean, you think he's going to get off. So he did get off so many times. And you're like, how many times are you going to let us fool with him? And to stick it out and persevere like that and finally have him, yeah, you can't imagine the elation. But, you know, the adrenaline rush from one of these things getting on the hook. I mean, there's nothing that comes close that I've ever done.
Swamp marlin. That's what we call it.
That's it. That's it.
And I've got to say, you know, what Will was describing there, when the most rewarding thing I've ever experienced about being the alligator program coordinator, I never dreamed when I started developing how we were going to do the season, how the regulations would work and everything, how the drawing would work. I never dreamed at that point the number of people that it would affect to get out and do some sort of outdoor recreation hunting.
Yeah.
And, as I've been out over the 20-year span out checking alligator hunters, I can't tell you the number of times that we would be out checking a boat, a vessel with alligator hunters and checking their license and everything, that there was somebody in the boat that would say, you know, this is the most exciting thing I've ever done in my life. Or there would be a grandfather in the boat saying, I've got 2 generations of my family here with me today out here enjoying this thing. And my kids are seeing things outdoors at night on the water that they never would have experienced if it wasn't for alligator hunting. And hearing those types of things are the most rewarding part of what I've ever done working for the Department of Wildlife, Fisheries and Parks. And we did, with Don's help, run some queries and things about licensed hunters. And we've been able to determine that there's about 6 to 7% of the people who go alligator hunting every year that are buying a hunting and fishing license for the very first time in their life.
Oh, that's cool.
And so it's recruiting people into the outdoor recreation and hunting environment, because otherwise they really had no interest in alligator hunting, but they get involved with someone like this who has gone and they hear the story from someone they trust that says, look, it really is fun. It really is safe. And they have pictures, they've got videos, and someone says, you know, I might be interested in going with you. And then they get involved. And so it creates this network of people that get interested in alligator hunting. And the numbers of applicants just keep going up every year. I think we're over 7,000 people putting in applications for 960 permits every year. And so
no wonder we didn't get drawn, Mac.
So tell me about this. So this gator's 14 feet, 3 inches long, 802.5 pounds. How does that rate with like the biggest gators that have been killed in across the South?
It ranks up there. I think the longest on official record is just over 15 feet. There is an old story that goes back to the 1890s. Have y'all ever heard of E.A. McElhaney?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know who that is?
We did a podcast about them.
Sure. All right. E.A. McElhaney, who lived in the late 1800s, claims to have killed an alligator in, I think it was 1893, that was down there on their property near, is it New Iberia, Louisiana? And he killed it. You know, back then there were no laws to protect alligators. They were killing them for their hide. And so they would go out and hunt alligators all the time. And he was on horseback, from what I understood, and killed this big alligator. It was too big to be able to get on the horse by himself. So he had to go back, and they came back later on. But he measured the alligator using his shotgun that he had with him and, you know, said it was, you know, 5.5 shotgun lengths long, which they determined to be 19 feet and 2 inches. That's the rumor that was the absolute largest alligator ever on record. There's a lot of people that say that, you know, that's probably not really accurate, because even back then, a 17-foot alligator was about the largest that had ever been recorded. But officially in the state of Mississippi, this is only the third alligator that we have officially measured over 14 feet.
Sounds like a fishing story, that 19-footer.
Yeah. Yeah, a good attorney in a courtroom.
If you'd have asked us how long this alligator was, you know, we might have made up 20 feet or something. Yeah.
Yeah. At what point did y'all know that it was, you know, over 12 or over 13?
We were on the boat ride back, and I was actually driving the boat and had my feet crossed. There's a picture, I think it was on Fox News, of my green boots, you know, on the gator. And I was looking, and I was looking at his head, and I was looking at the back of the boat. I was looking at his tail. I mean, his tail had a foot going over the front of the boat in the water. I knew his head wasn't that far from, you know, 6 inches from the back of the boat. And I started thinking, you know, this gator's got a good bit bigger than 12 feet. And I kind of tapped Will and said something about it. And he was half asleep. You know, he said, yeah, man. We kept going. And as soon as we got to the land, I grabbed a tape measure. I ran up to my truck, grabbed a tape measure, and I ran back down there, and Don Jay grabbed one in, and I started pulling his little 15-foot, you know, cheap tape measure. I start pulling it out, and I get to 12-foot, and I'm like, wow, there's a lot of alligator left. And I get to 13-foot, and I'm starting to get excited, and I get on down, and I look, and I think we had him at like 14.5 or something, you know, right there on the bank. And Will was just wide open. He's running to the boat, getting stuff, putting in the truck, going back, just trying to get the boat empty. And he's passing me, as I say, that's 14.5. I just remember Will screaming, what? Because I didn't have any, I had no idea what the state record was. You know, like he said, we were out there having fun.
Oh, yeah.
And even then, we didn't really know.
No, and I think it finally dawned on us. We were driving out. I think one of us Googled, you know, what the record was. And I remember looking at, like, whenever they said it, I was like, I think I looked at Will. I was like, Will, we may be going to see if we got the state record here. Mm-hmm. And it just, you know, that's when it kind of started dawning on us that
I remember you started calling me. My phone was ringing. I was in a different truck in front of it. My phone, we didn't have good service out there. My phone kept ringing. What, did this alligator fall off the boat? What's going on?
Does their weight fluctuate, Mr. Ricky, like from the time you pull them out of the water to like a, like, do they get lighter or anything like that?
I don't think it's measurable on something that big, like bass or something. When someone gets a record, they want to get it weighed as soon as they can because they do dehydrate some. But I don't think it's a major factor with alligators.
So how far did that gator travel from where you turned it, Lush?
Yeah, good question. So we relocated 29 and a half miles, I think it was, away from where we originally caught it. We caught it south of Vicksburg and took it up the Yazoo River. They caught it 22.4 miles north of where we released it. So it wasn't his first boat ride.
No. He didn't remember our
obviously
boat ride.
He was trying to get out of town.
Yeah.
Is that normal for him to move 20 miles or so like that?
Again, it's kind of all across the board. I literally have GPS locations of where people have caught their alligator versus where I caught it and tagged it. We catch a lot of alligators on purpose. We just go out, catch alligators, we tag them, turn them loose where we caught them. We take a GPS location for every one of those. I've got at least two records of people's GPS location being 25 yards from where I caught it.
Wow.
But I've also got a number of those that are as many as 16, 18, 20 miles
20
away.
Miles away.
Was that a male?
Yes.
Ricky, do males have a baculum?
Why are you always bringing up baculum?
I just wonder, this might be a big baculum. There is.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if there would be something to retain there. You might want to try it.
Yeah, find out for yourself.
Well, we got some.
I'm not interested.
We got some gator goobers over here on the table. Yeah. Okay.
These things are famous. Have y'all tried these?
I'll have some.
Yeah. I tried them earlier, and I've always said that it's hard to beat a just good old plain salted boiled peanut. And this is the first time I've had a seasoned boiled peanut that blew me away. I will eat that over a plain one any day.
What
have
you got there, Ricky?
This is one of those traditions. Boiled peanuts has been something I've done for a long time. And when we would go out to work alligator hunting season, we would literally work sometimes 16, 18 hours nonstop. And I always carried plenty of sustenance with me to get by depending on what would happen. And one of my items of sustenance was always bags of boiled peanuts. Mm. And because when you're out working patrol, sometimes you don't get many breaks, but then sometimes we would see a group hunting and we'd lay like, let's just lay here and just kind of watch for a while. And I'd sit on the side of the boat and I'd eat my boiled peanuts. Well, over the years, checking people, they would see my peanuts in the boat and they'd say, hey, can I have one? And I'd, sure, y'all can have some. And I'd share peanuts with people. Well, through the Mississippi Alligator Hunters Facebook page, they kind of became famous. Mm. People would talk about my peanuts, and then they became gator goobers, is what people called them. And so I kind of made it known that if you were on the alligator hunting page and my vessel checked you during the alligator season, I'm not going to say anything about it, but if you'll mention it and bring it up, I'll share some of my gator goobers with you. And so that's kind of been a tradition that's gotten started with the Mississippi Alligator Hunter page. I know there's a lot of people post every year. Oh, yeah. They got their gator goobers. There's one person I'm going to go ahead and mention. Her name is Boo Greer. She's a young lady about, I think she's 5 or 6 years old now. And Boo started going alligator hunting when she was 3 with her mom and dad, and Jimmy and Elizabeth Greer.
Yeah.
And every year they would seek me out on the waterway so that I could drop by and give Boo some of my gator goobers.
How about that?
I've got several pictures of me and Boo together with her gator goobers, and I heard she's pretty heartbroken that I'm no longer out there giving her gator goobers.
Yeah, I bet so. So you have a big peanut bowl before alligator season?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, well, he's always cooking something at his house.
Yeah, yeah.
At the Flint Roosting Grill.
That's right.
Yeah. 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 August is harvest season for peanuts, and I've got a friend down in Georgetown, Mississippi, the Sojourners, Sojourner Farm, they farm peanuts, and they're famous for their jumbo peanuts, and I always get them.
Yeah, we need to make a batch for our dove hunt this weekend. Bobby.
I love a bullpen. I can't wait to try some afterwards. And when I look at these guys, there's such big smiles on their face. Obviously, you guys are friends. Tanner, I'm going to look at you and ask you, what was your big takeaway from this event?
I've said it a couple times, I think, to Will. It was like a game of cat and mouse, but we were the mouse, you know, for 7 hours. But honestly, I mean, just anytime I get to go out and hunt with my buddies, you know, it's always awesome. I just enjoy it. If we don't catch us anything, we catch a state record. It don't matter. We're out there having a big time.
Yeah.
What about Joey?
Yeah, I mean, this is the third or fourth gator I've caught with Don and Will, and I just love every second of it. Like I said, the adrenaline rush you get from this is unbelievable. But I just learn something every time from these two. I mean, they truly know what they're doing. And there's never a time that you're out there and you feel unsafe. You really don't. So it's the whole thing has just been kind of a whirlwind experience and a thrill like that. You know, I've never in my life been able to experience something like this. So just grateful to be a part of the whole process, really.
Well, the guys on the end, y'all sound like y'all are the seasoned hunters that they keep referring to, but there's got to be a takeaway from y'all as well.
Oh, definitely. You know, it is fun that, you know, now that we're all getting a little bit older, we don't get to spend as much time as we used to together. And so to be able to, you know, at least once a year to be able to get together and do this type of thing is just so much fun. And, you know, and to catch something like that, that's just, you know, I think Will mentioned, that's not something we've ever set out to do. You know, it just happened, and it was just, a heck of an experience.
Cool thing, yeah.
I forgot to mention, that's me and Will had spoke before, but the first time I really got to know Will was on the water gator hunting. I was with another crew, and we came around the corner, and Will had caught what I believe to be the biggest gator I've ever seen in my life. How big was that gator?
He was 12, 4, 5, but he had a huge head. He was a truly giant alligator. His head was probably as big as this one. He was big. He just wasn't as long.
No. And they had their boat. It was just two of them, and their boat was kicked up on its side. Their back was on the bank. They'd been there for hours trying to get this alligator in their boat. And we came around the corner, and he flagged us over, and I jumped in the boat with him, and we wrestled that thing in. And he was high-fiving and hugging me, and I mean, since then, we've been best buds hunting. And
teamwork.
That's it. Yeah.
It takes a team.
I knew right then when Tanner got in there and flipped that thing in the boat so easy, I was like, man, we're going to be friends. But, you know, to just echo what some of these guys have said, you know, the camaraderie among the guys and doing something that can potentially be dangerous, fighting with a, you know, huge historic, you know, prehistoric type animal, and with guys you're just having fun with. And, you know, there was one guy that would have been on this hunt, but he had come down with a terrible sickness and was in the ICU. His name's Chad Mask. He would have been on this hunt. Right. And then we've had other friends, people that have hunted with us that have, you know, passed on and gone. And it just, you know, just makes you think that, man, the good times that we've had together in the boat is just something that you'll never forget. I had a friend who, you know, it's funny. The people I've taken alligator hunting is just kind of bizarre because it's people that I never would have hunted with but for the lottery system. Mm-hmm. I work at a big law firm, Butler, Snow & Jackson. And
I used to work there.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Look at y'all.
Richie, we need to send them an invoice on that.
We'll send you one if you want.
Richie, cut that out.
Right. Don't send an invoice, Richie.
But, you know, with the lottery system, I mean, in the early days, especially, I mean, I'd be going down the halls. Hey, lottery, you know, where's your information? Give me this. Give me that. And I would put in just everybody on my hall, you know, and I would gator hunt with people that, you know, you wouldn't think that you would be hanging out with, especially at night. But there was one guy named Charles Griffin. he and I hunted together one night, and we were on the Mississippi River in the Southwest zone. And then a couple of years later, he had a heart attack, and he was like in a coma for a month or something. After he woke up, he said, "Will, you're not going to believe, so I dreamed about that alligator hunt when I was asleep in a coma." So it's just these memories, and the times we have are just together out there with family, with friends, with my kids. It's just something that's just so much fun. And whether you're catching a state record gator or a 6-footer, it's impactful and it's fun.
It's special. It really is.
It's unique to most other hunting activities in that it doesn't matter what you wear. It doesn't matter how bad you smell. And it's a social event. You know, these guys are getting together before the hunt. There's as much fun in the preparation of the hunt, which for a lot of these people, it takes months to get all their stuff together.
Oh, yeah. Watching them get everything together was crazy.
And, you know, and bringing kids. And like you say, some of the best memories I've heard people talk about is, you know, bringing young kids. And in particular, handicapped kids, disabled kids that normally don't get to partake in a lot of hunting opportunities for obvious reasons, but they're taking them out and getting them involved. And when you see one of those kids' eyes light up and the way they react to these types of things, their excitement is like 20-fold what these guys are experiencing because it's something they'll never experience again, never experienced before.
Yep. And one other thing I would say about this hunt that you were asking, you know, kind of what stuck out to you and what made it successful. And it's got to be just determination. Yeah. I mean, Tanner was really determined to catch this alligator. I had kind of been sick the week before. I was kind of like, whatever at some points, but Tanner and Don were super just, hey, we're going to catch this alligator. And at one point in the night, I was like, I don't know if we have enough equipment left to catch this alligator. Cause he had broken that point. He had broken a rod and stripped out the gears on one of the reels, and we had re-spooled the other ones. I think we had two rods left, and they were, you know, we just stayed after him. But Tanner's determination and Don's determination and their good casting, I think Don put the final cast on him to catch him.
Yeah.
And it was good stuff. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, when we finally got the two lines, I think I did. The last one, I caught him on a blind cast, but I got him by the tail. And then he drug us to the other side. And when his head came up, Tanner laid one just right in the part. I mean, couldn't have, you know, been a better cast right there by his head. And so at that point, we actually had a good, you know, hold of him.
Mm-hmm. That's the first time.
Yeah. And that's probably when y'all said, we're going to get this gator.
Yeah. I don't know if we ever said that. he found a way to just keep getting off and keep getting off. And we threw every trick we had at him and he just kept beating us. But like Will said, just, you know, persistence
and determination gets you a long way.
Well, you know, when this happened, it hit on Facebook immediately and we saw it and started it was sharing it around, talking about it. But then we've watched how you guys have handled yourselves on some interviews and stuff. Just been very impressed with how y'all have done that and represented Mississippi and hunters and whatnot.
Right.
You guys have done a great job. Y'all deserve what you – and you worked hard for this. So let's hit the horn for him, Richie.
Hit the horn for him, Richie.
Well, it's you know, in doing some of these interviews and talking to people all over the country, I mean, we've had people from California to New York and everywhere in between reach out to us. And I just realized at some point how much people don't know about what we do. And then I started thinking and hearing Ricky talk about his efforts early on. I mean, Ricky trained thousands of people on how to alligator hunt. I mean, and he really gave us through the training through the Department of Wildlife. They used to have mandatory training and I went to several of them and I learned so much. And I don't think that, you know, I would know what I was doing at all had I not had that training. And so, you know, I just started thinking Ricky and that group trained thousands of people And there's a lot of people out there that are really good at it and know what they're doing. And I think we halfway know what we're doing sometimes.
Obviously. I echo what you said because I went to Cleveland to one of your classes early on.
Delta State.
Yeah. And what I learned there, not only about the biology, about the animal, gave me such more respect for it. You know, and then, of course, the hunting tactics really helped out a lot, too, because we didn't know what we were doing at all. That's good stuff.
And I do want to say that we didn't use any sonar. Okay, just going to put no that live scope right now. No live scope. I mean, we're
going old school.
Old school. Yeah.
We were lucky the trolling motor worked.
Yeah. It did.
Y'all's equipment sounds like mine.
Yeah. Well, we've learned over the years that if you take anything nice out there, it's going to get broken anyway. So just start off with bad stuff.
I'm just shocked that y'all were in a 14-foot boat. That just seems, when I look at the four of y'all, I figured y'all probably were in a 16-foot center console. You
know? So, have y'all decided what you're going to do with it? Like, what is there a...
Who's getting a full body mount in the house? Oh.
I'm getting a skull mount on it. Cool. And then, I guess, Tanner, you getting the hide?
Yeah, I think we're going to kind of split some of the hide.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can all I get right. a scoop? I mean,
definitely.
Cool. The meat got donated to a food bank, so the needy folks will get that. The processor will process it into different varieties of sausage and stuff, and they do a real good job with it.
That's great.
That really is. So, what should we be asking, Mike? Is there anything else we need to ask from these guys?
I think they're just, I mean, good representatives of folks from Mississippi. And I mean, it just echoes all the work that Mr. Ricky did to make this happen. I mean,
now, Ricky, who is the new coordinator?
Okay. So, the guy that took my place is named Andrew Arnett. He originally was hired with the Department of Wildlife and worked as a regional biologist. And then after he'd been working with us, in that capacity, he became a law enforcement officer and was a conservation officer in South Mississippi. So when I got ready to leave, they asked me, you know, did I have any recommendations for some folks? And Andrew was one of those people that I suggested would be a good candidate. And he got selected.
He's got to be excited about all this. I know he couldn't make it today. Yep. But.
And I would like to note that he is about 3 inches shorter than me. we do not discriminate except on height. And it was a requirement that they be shorter than me.
He filled the role.
I am 5'5" for the record.
Joey, you look like you're about to say
something. Yeah, I had a question for Ricky, actually. And I think other people would find this interesting, too. When we went to the processor, there were some, I guess, biologists from Clemson that were there. Mm-hmm. And from my understanding, from talking to them, they were leaving. They had, you know, gotten their samples or whatever in Mississippi. We're heading to Louisiana, Texas, South Carolina, and Georgia. And just wanted to see if you could speak to that a little bit. I just found that extremely interesting.
Yeah. So over the years, we've been contacted by other universities and other states with different research projects that were going on. And Clemson had contacted me back in the fall about they were trying to find states that they would be able to get samples from, which would be stomach contents. They wanted to do some DNA work, and they were also going to do some an analysis of toxicants and things like that were in alligators. And so I got in contact with them and told them, I said, look, we've got a great situation. We've got Red Antler Processing in Yazoo City that has been involved with us for a few years cooperating, and they have the facilities where you could be there and get potentially several hundred samples over a 10-day period, because that's about how many they've been processing every year, 300 plus alligators. And so they came with a team of, they had 3 different biologists there. And as the alligators were coming through and they were processing them, they were getting their samples, and then they would move the carcass to the floor, and they would retain the stomach stomach intact, and taking all these samples back, which will be a really cool study to see what they come up with. And they're shifting around to other states doing similar collections of data.
Boy, I bet that's pretty rough stuff after they get it back.
But on that too, you know, I've seen on Facebook people not disposing of their gators properly and all that kind of stuff. This is why you need to take it to the right spot so you know, you can continue with the conservation work and everything that goes on with these critters.
Yeah,
right.
That makes a lot of sense. Ricky, you're pointing at something, and I don't have my glasses on. Well, I can't see.
What's his new gig?
Yeah, I want to know more about
Tell us about that, Ricky.
Yeah, so I had the opportunity to move into a different position, and I took the position in February. The Mississippi legislature has been working for years to build a fund that would fund wildlife and fisheries conservation projects as well as natural-based outdoor recreation projects. And once that got passed in the 2022 legislature, which funded with $10 million, they needed to hire an executive director to run the program. And I got approached about being interested in that position. And that's where I decided to go after almost 30 years with the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries. So now I'm director of the Mississippi Outdoor Stewardship Trust Fund, which.
There you go.
Thank you. We got $10 million in 2022. And we've got an additional $15 million that was appropriated in 2023 legislative session. We take applications from state agencies, municipalities, non-government organizations for projects that have to do with wildlife conservation, fisheries conservation, access to public lands, public waters, and then outdoor-based recreation, which, you know, walking trails and education centers and things like this. And so this first year, we took in 104 applications, and we funded 21 projects with that $10 million. And we're in the process now. Those projects are actually fixing to start breaking ground here in the next month. And we'll be taking applications again in October for the next round.
That's
exciting. Really exciting. Yeah.
Can it's you really describe cool. one of the one yeah, or two the of the projects?
Yeah, tell us some of the projects.
Well, let's see. There's one project down in Capaya County that will be on an existing facility that is designed just for handicapped kids and kids with special needs. That's what they cater to. And they needed a new facility on their lake to allow handicapped and disabled kids to fish and to also be able to get access to a boat or canoes and things like that. And so we're funding that project to build those facilities there. There is a large property in Rankin County that y'all may be familiar with, the Fannie Cook Nature Preserve. Fannie Cook was the founder of the Mississippi Game and Fish Commission back in the 1938. And the Wildlife Mississippi, which is a non-government organization, purchased that property, which is just below the spillway of Ross Barnett Reservoir and extends all the way down to Flowood at Highway 25 or Lakeland Drive. There's about 3,000 plus acres there. Our fund is going to secure that property in perpetuity as an easement so that it cannot revert to anything else. It'll be saved as a nature preserve. It's also going to fund some road development, boat ramps, educational facilities, some habitat work, different things of that nature. 21 different projects all across state. There's a couple that are going to be involved in providing new boat ramp access to waterways that previously have not been accessible, things like that. So
that's
doing
great.
Doing great job.
I'm sure tickled to still be with a state agency. It's not the Department of Wildlife. This is all worked through the Department of Finance Administration. So I'm still in state service, but I'm still dealing with wildlife conservation, but on a much broader scale, and I'm really enjoying it.
That's good.
That's great.
You're perfect man for that job.
No doubt about it.
Yeah, no doubt.
So guys, so we got Don Woods, we got Joey Clark, Tanner White, and Will Thomas. Congratulations,
guys.
No doubt
about it.
Just, unbelievable. It's just incredible. I don't know what you're going to do for an encore.
Yeah.
Well, that's my question. If we keep the record, do we get automatically drawn next year to defend the belt?
You know, they should.
I'm not in.
I don't know. I didn't get drawn this year.
I would vote for that.
I would imagine somebody will draw and want y'all to take them.
Yeah, I bet so too. No doubt about it.
Does we anybody, might, we go, might need to get y'all a boat sponsor or something.
Yeah, that's true.
We could use some poles.
Yeah. Some braid and some poles.
I kind of like our small boat.
Yeah. Well, I like kind of having a small boat too.
Do y'all have any concluding thoughts that you want to bring?
We appreciate y'all having us up here.
Oh, yeah. And,
we love y'all's place.
Our pleasure.
Fans of the podcast. I've listened to a lot of them. So,
thank you for having us up here. Yeah. I told you somebody was listening.
Somebody's listening.
I knew they were.
This has just been a great experience.
What a great story, though. I've just enjoyed seeing the smiles and the we all love hunting and y'all have kind of taken this to a little bit of a higher level here.
Just keep applying. And I'd be curious to know how many times have you applied and how many times have you individually been drawn?
Ooh.
Well, how many years has so we've been doing it, 19 years?
I think we started in.
Mm-hmm. So 19 years, I've gone every year but one, but I've only been drawn probably 4 times maybe. Now, some of those years, it was first come, first serve.
Yeah.
And with a good internet connection, you could get 2 or 3 people tagged. I guess 4 or 5 is probably personal.
With 2 of those being
but
first
2
come.
Of those yeah. first come.
So
first
those
serve.
Don't count.
Yeah.
Don't
yeah.
Count. Yeah.
I'm 0 for 7.
I think I've actually been drawn twice maybe.
And you've been putting in for 19 years too?
No, I started with maybe 2013 or 14. Mm-hmm. So it's about 10 years.
I've never been drawn, and I kind of gave up until this year. So it's been a while since I've been with these guys. I guess probably 7 years since I've been with them. So, yeah, it's been a minute.
How about that? Wow.
What year did the Northeast Zone open up?
2013.
So how long have you been putting in, Matt? I've been putting in 10 years and been drawn once.
Mine, all right, 6 years, I'd say.
And been drawn twice?
Well, once.
Once. Richie? Well,
I've been, 7 years, I think? Yeah, and just once.
Got drawn once.
What about McKellar? He's getting...
McKellar's been drawn 3 times.
Yeah.
And I think 7 years? Yeah, he's got the record.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah, he's killing it.
We might need to pull his name from the list.
No, we don't.
Ricky, you know anybody?
We're applying for most of Northeast, too.
So, guys, we like y'all stay around. Let's take y'all to lunch.
Yeah,
Ricky's buying.
Yeah. All right. You got that
fine. We don't need more than peanuts. But.
Oh, man. Well, this has been fun, and congratulations.
Appreciate y'all taking the time to come up here and see this, for sure.
From everybody at Mossy Oak, we're just real proud of the way y'all have handled everything.
Thank you guys for putting this podcast on, and I know it's got a national reach, and the topics that you have a national reach. It's about all sorts of things, but as for us as Mississippians, we're very proud of Mossy Oak and being housed right here in Mississippi, and we appreciate the opportunity to share events that are special to Mississippi that can only be experienced here, and it's great.
I appreciate that.
Well said, sir.
We're very proud Mississippians here, too, for sure.
Yeah.
We even got an import.
So I've lived here longer than I lived in Alabama.
We'll give you an honorary badge then.
I wanted to be clever and say something like, "See you later, alligator," but I can't figure out how to do that. So.
After a while, crocodile.
Yeah. Why don't you just say goodbye, Dudley?
Goodbye, Dudley.
Get us out of here, Richie.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Gamekeeper Podcast. And be sure to tune in again. Subscribe to Gamekeeper Farming for Wildlife magazine. And don't miss the Mossy Oak Properties Fistful of Dirt podcast with my good buddy, Ronnie Cuz Strickland.